The Ira Kaufman Podcast is presented by Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon. The road to summer savings starts right there. Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa, just west of 275 on Fletcher, and Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon on Causeway Boulevard. Now, as we have mentioned before, you can hang out with Ira, eat food, free food from Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon while you check out the brand new, all new 2020 Cadillac XT6 Thursday, next week, June 20th, Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon from 5 to 7 p.m. If you want to go, bring a friend, hang out with Ira. All you have to do is RSVP at edmorsecadillacbrandon.com. edmorsecadillacbrandon.com to RSVP. The following night, June 21st, Friday, 5 to 7 p.m. at the Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa showroom, just west of 275 on Fletcher. Go to edmorsecadillactampa.com to RSVP, and you can come out, eat, and eat very well, hang out with Ira, look at all the Cadillacs, great time, and great fun. So there you go. edmorsecadillactampa.com is also where you can shop all the great June offers, including the 2019 Escalade 0% for 72 months for qualified buyers. Get all the details at edmorsecadillactampa.com. So many other great offers there. As you'll see, 0% for 60 months on the 2019 XT5, the crossover that Ira likes so much. And at Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon, get over there as well. So many tremendous lease offers. More than 1 million satisfied customers at the Ed Morse family of dealerships. More than 73 years. Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa, Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon. They are the Cadillac dealers of Hillsborough County. Now, before I send you over to Ira and Lee DeCamper breaking down all kinds of things, bucks and other things as well, the podcast, iTunes, Podbean, Google Play, we are making the call this week for reviews. Leave a review on your platform of choice if it's available, and we'll take a look at it. Ira takes these things very seriously. We love the positive feedback. We get some laughs out of the negative feedback, so we always appreciate that. Also, special announcement, Derek Brooks will be heard on the podcast in an exclusive interview next week. So we continue rolling on through the summer. Ira, of course, you can watch him on JoeBucksFan.com on the Tampa 2 show from the Identity Tampa Bay. And if you don't have their newsletter yet, go to the Identity Tampa Bay website and subscribe. It's free. It really gives you some cool stuff on what's going on in the area. It's Monday through Friday. Just really light, some great videos. I've really enjoyed it quite a bit. And you can find them on Twitter as well, also on Facebook, the Identity Tampa Bay, which is one of the Jeff Vinnick properties at the whole Lightning Group over there. So it's quality stuff. I think it will add to your enjoyment of the whole Tampa Bay area. So we got news coming next week with Derek Brooks popping on the podcast. You'll hear him here. And Ira's got all kinds of good stuff right now.
Yeah. All right, ladies and gentlemen, he's back. He is the custodian of Canton. He is the king of Newport Richey. He is the sage of Tampa Bay sports. Ladies and gentlemen, none other than the Ira Kaufman. Ira, how are you today, man?
You can't keep a good man down, DeCamper. You can't do it. Much as you try, you can't do it.
Hey, you know, I got to ask you. Javier, your good friend Javier from Panama. We're not talking about Panama City, Florida. We're talking about Panama.
You mean the guy who gave me a gallon of rum at the Buck draft party?
And a couple of cigars.
And a couple of cigars. Very tasty. Thank you, Javier.
He likes your stories. And I thought about this the other day. You used to cover the Giants for the UPI in New York. Were you there for the immortal Ray Hanley experience?
I was there for the immortal Ray Perkins experience. Okay. My very first year, 79. They drafted some punk quarterback named Phil Sims, and in comes Perkins. The Giants hadn't made the playoffs in like 13 years. So I think what you're getting to is, during the summer, if there's ever a lull time, and there never is when you're talking Bucks, but we'll sprinkle in some of the stories from my crazy career, Lee, and I got a bunch.
Endless stories. Now, I saw a documentary over the weekend on NFL Network. You covered for UPI the famous NFC Championship between San Francisco and Dallas, 1981, was it?
You must have ESP. I just went to the men's room, Lee, and while I was tinkling, they had some radio station on that were playing famous radio calls from games.
Yeah.
And it was the Dwight Clark game that they played it. They played two different ones. One was Jack Buck.
Yeah, that was a famous call, yeah.
And the other one was somebody from Dallas Radio, and he said, like, oh, my God, he caught the ball, Clark, touchdown,
was that,
49ers.
Was that Vern Lundquist?
It was Vern Lundquist, yes.
I never heard that call.
I believe it was Vern Lundquist.
Okay, well, the reason why I bring that up.
And, yes, I was at that game in Candlestick.
Yeah, well, the reason why I bring that up, in this documentary, there was a big debate. Was Montana throwing the ball away or not? I know exactly where I was at. That was one of those lightning bolt kind of plays that changes a sport.
He kept drifting to the right sideline. And now, there were three guys chasing his ass.
Yeah, well, yeah. Tuttle Jones among them. You were there in person. You were watching the game live. I was watching it on TV. Like it was yesterday, I remember. Did you think he was throwing that away from your vantage
point? Yes, I did.
So did I.
And I believe it was third down. So yes. To live another down, I thought he was. I thought he was. You call it the catch, but you could call it the throw. I mean, what a throw.
It's a perfect throw. You probably have seen the film clip of Montana coming to the sideline because Walsh had called timeout. And Walsh said, if it's there, simply throw it away.
If it's not there.
Yeah, if it's not there, simply throw it away.
And who got beat?
Everson Walsh.
Poor Everson Walsh, who I believe had two picks in that game.
Did he?
But nobody wants to talk about that. They want to talk about him, victimized on the winning touchdown.
Well, actually, the thing that people ignore, and you brought this up to me, and you were shocked I remembered it. Dallas damn near won that game. Drew Pearson caught a pass.
On a slant.
And he was caught by his towel, was he not?
One of those young defensive backs, it was not Ronnie Lott, I think it might have been Carlton Williamson, grabbed him down maybe by that towel.
Mm-hmm.
Or I think he was gone.
Yeah.
Danny White was the quarterback.
Yeah, and the very next play, Danny White fumbled. He got hit by Joe Stuckey. No, Stuckey was offensive lineman.
He got hit and he fumbled.
Yeah.
That's right.
And San Francisco recovered.
And that started the Niner dynasty.
Yes, it did. Part of the reason I bring this up, a lot of Bucks fans are hounded, Steve and I, Steve Isbitz, JoeBucksFan.com as well. They're hounded because you're not positive. Meanwhile, the Bucks have been a punching bag for the last decade. I always thought it was dishonest and disrespectful to a reader if you don't write what you see. If you don't write what you see. So I'm not going to write something I think is dishonest to make someone feel good. I'm not going to do that. That's just, I can't. I got to put my head down on the pillow at night. And we'll get more about this in a second. Part of the reason why I'm not kosher with the Bucks this year is that I just don't think they have the talent. And they're relying on a bunch of young guys, especially in the secondary. Having said that, that game that you covered when San Francisco beat Dallas, they had three rookie starting defensive backs.
Excellent point.
Carlton Williamson, Eric Wright, who I know people played against him in high school, from East St. Louis. And, of course, Ronnie Lott, who was a corner when he first came in the league. He was sensational from USC. And that does give people a little bit of hope. Now, that's a rare that you would have three rookies starting on
very
a Super Bowl
rare.
Team.
Very rare.
But, it's not like it's impossible because you saw it with your own eyes.
You know, Lee, this thing about this perception that we're being maybe a little bit overly negative in the offseason, part of me understands it, Lee. I really do. And I think it's a question of timing. When the Bucks fell apart after that 2-0 start, they tumbled into the twilight zone. I think they lost 7 out of 8 at that point. The only win was against Cleveland, and they were probably lucky to win that game in overtime. Lee, when that happened and we're killing the Bucks, I don't think Buck fans had a beef with us.
No.
It's the fact that this is the offseason. If you're ever going to have a time for optimism, they have Devin White. They got a new coaching staff. See, I think 90% of the reason for optimism for Buck fans is this new coaching staff.
Sure.
That's the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit Devin White. You give him 10%. You know, for every Devin White, you got the negatives of JPP, the salary cap crunch that led to the dismissal of Gerald McCoy for Ndamukong Suh. Maybe that's a slight upgrade. I'd have to see that. I don't know that that's an upgrade. We're going to see. If Sue's engaged, I think it probably will be an upgrade. But he's got to be engaged. Lee, it's the timing of here we are, May, June, July, they haven't lost a game, and here we are pointing out the flaws in this football team. But Lee, it's based on an 11-year playoff drought. It's based on ownership of the NFC South basement, and so we have to be realists too, Lee.
There's a good friend of JoeBucksFan.com, his name's Sean Sullivan.
I met him at the draft party.
And we got talking about a potential 18-game schedule. And this guy, a hardcore Bucks fan, grew up in the sombrero in the 80s. This guy said, oh, great, 18-game schedule. That means instead of watching the Bucks lose 12 games a year, I get to watch them lose 15.
And that's hardcore. That's a hardcore fan.
And, of course, a Bucks fan on Twitter, I put that out there because I thought it was amusing, if not accurate. Obviously, a Bucks fan came at me and goes, oh, how quickly people forget. I'm like, quickly? There are young adults in the workforce that don't have a clear memory of the Bucks winning their last playoff game, which was a Super Bowl win. Quickly, it's 17 years.
Lee.
Quickly, my rear end.
Lee, the worst part of this whole scenario is that every year you see other teams make the leap. That's what's killing Buck fans. Why not us? It's not a league where, you know, the same 12 teams make the playoffs. When the season ends, the NFL puts out this big release of how great and competitive things are. The first thing they ever mention, 5 new playoff teams and 1 or 2 teams that went from last to first. And this is going on for 10 or 20 years. It's a long-term trend. The league loves it. They pride themselves on it.
Parody.
And that's what drives Buck fans crazy. So Buffalo made the playoffs a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Buffalo. Cleveland's all in a state of euphoria. Yeah. Now, they haven't won a darn thing yet, Lee.
Yeah, they're jumping up and down, man. And, of course, the Rams, they move, and still they wind up in the playoffs.
When's the buck turn? Well, if it doesn't happen on the Bruce Arians, Lee, it's back to the drawing board. You don't even want to think about it.
Oh, my gosh. Now, what do you make of this? We heard Dirk Cutter say a couple years ago in Hard Knocks, the opening scene. It was the opening scene when he's addressing the team as training camp begins, and he said, this is the most talented Bucks team we've had since I've been in Tampa Bay. Then they go out and they lose 11 games. Father Dungy comes in last year. You know, they announced his entry into the Ring of Honor. And he said, he used the term, no doubt. He said there was no doubt in his mind the Bucks had talent to get to the playoffs. They lose another 11 games. Enter Bruce Arians. He talks about, oh my gosh, you know, this team's got talent.
It's not a question of talent, yeah.
Yeah. Outside, Jay Glazer, you know, they don't have any talent. And there's a guy for the Ringer. His name escapes me right now. Ray somebody. And he's like, there's no talent here. There's gonna be a house cleaning after this season. Do you think the guys that are connected to the Bucks are just saying this?
I think some of it is lip service. Okay. When Carter said that, when Arians says it, Dungy's not connected with the team. So,
well, he was a coach here.
A coach here. Lee, you said on a previous podcast, which is only a day or two old, that you're questioning the talent on this roster. Are they looking through rose-colored glasses and we're not? Lee, I'm going to say this, and I know you know, we may get some comments about it again with the negativity, but depth wins in this league, too. Depth plays a big role. Some people think the Bucks were ravaged by injuries last year. I don't happen to subscribe to that. I think some positions got hit hard. Others did not.
Corners.
The offensive line was untouched.
Yeah, and that's usually a critical factor. A couple years ago when Atlanta made their Super Bowl run and came up just short, remember Pat Kerwin on NFL radio, he used to say, how many starts did they miss on the offensive line? One start. He goes, there's your answer.
See, and that could show up this year.
Did they miss a start last year? One start?
One or two. Out of 5 guys.
Yeah.
I mean, that's phenomenal.
And they were pathetic.
Yeah. I mean, that's 80 man games, and they missed 1 or 2.
And generally, like Pat Kerwin says, you count how many starts your offensive line misses, you'll figure out how good of a team you have. Well, the Bucks had hardly any misses.
That makes it worse. Why does he say that? Because that's the one where you need players playing together. Meshing.
Yes.
You don't need it in the wide receiver spot. Guys do their thing. They got to be like hands on a glove, you know, 5 fingers moving together.
Working as one.
I don't like the fingers. I'm not talking about a middle finger.
Yeah. Well, some will say the middle finger belongs at right guard.
The left side and center are among the most highly paid offensive linemen in football, and I don't think the Bucks are getting enough bang for the buck. I really don't. I think Marpet can even play better. I think he'd be the first one to tell you. Probably the best of the bunch, but he's not a Pro Bowler yet. They made Jensen the highest paid center in the league, Lee. He was adequate.
Yeah.
And they've re-upped Marpet and now Donovan Smith. So, Lee, shouldn't that left side of that line be, I'm not saying you got to be Art Shell and Gene Upshaw. That was phenomenal.
Yeah.
That the Raiders had that on the left side. And whoever ran the ball was going to get 4.5 yards. I mean, those are two monsters.
You ever hear John Madden's line about that?
Well, what did he say? What did he say?
Because I always got criticized for running to the left. He goes, well, I had Art Shell, I had Gene Upshaw,
and I had Jim Otto.
Who wouldn't run left?
Absolutely. And everybody knew what they would do.
And he still blew them out. Yeah.
So, but here's my point, to a lesser degree, obviously. The Bucks need to develop that kind of dependability in the running game. Because I think pass protection was, I would say, adequate. Yeah, you think I'm stretching with adequate?
Well, look at the yards they put up. It couldn't have been that bad.
Now Winston and Fitzpatrick got hit.
Mm-hmm.
Who doesn't get hit?
Yeah.
Guys get hit. But, Lee, as far as injuries are concerned and depth and talent, if injuries hit in the trenches, this team's in a lot of trouble, Lee. They're in a lot of trouble.
Yeah, and you talked about depth a little bit ago. What's the first thing to happen when you start getting crunched by the salary gap? Depth.
You don't want that big gap between the starter and the next man up.
Well, you're talking.
I think that's part of what makes New England so good is.
They can plug Ding or anybody in there.
Yeah. They substitute and they don't miss a beat.
Oh my gosh! Now you talk about offensive line, and you're a good friend and ours, Ian Beckles, local radio personality, very popular, former Bucks guard, on his podcast, he bluntly said, "You want to fix Jameis? If you think he needs fixing, by the way. You want to fix Jameis? Real simple. Run." He said, when you throw 45 times a game, he goes, I don't care who the quarterback is. That's not an equation for winning. And there's some stats out there that show when Jameis throws under 35 times a game, his record is very good. What do you make of Beckles saying that?
I think Beckles needs to take it a step further. Run better.
Yeah.
Run better. Maybe that's what he means.
Yeah,
run
he also added, he goes, I don't know if they have the horses to run, but if you can run, that's the magic elixir for Jameis.
And Lee, you know very well, if you run into a brick wall, which Ronald Jones did 23 times last year, you know, basically, it's hard to keep giving guys the ball when that happens.
Yeah, because you got to win a game.
And, you know, and there's some other factors, because there's some of the road games where they're down by 20 at the half, and we understand that. I am not going to blame Cutter for abandoning the run. I've said it before on this podcast. I'm going to say it again. I don't think he did a bad job sticking with the run. He just didn't run it well and never found out a way to do it well during his 3 years as head coach. That's got to change. That will help Jameis Winston. It will help the play action. And all of a sudden, it's third and two. It's a lot better than third and six.
And Jameis is pretty good at play action his rookie year.
Now, and they had a very balanced offense that year.
Yeah,
very balanced.
But, and I had heard that Lovie ordered Cutter, you will run the ball. He didn't have any choice.
Now, hold on. That brings me to a point. I wrote about Todd Bowles this week, Lee, and I mentioned that he lost some of his luster, as a defensive guru during his 4 years in New York. The first year, I think he won 10 games. His first year.
Mm-hmm.
The last three games were a disaster, and their defense was not very good, and they had some talent. So I think he lost a little bit of luster in that regard. But, Lee, I'm going to say this to you, and you tell me whether this applied to Cutter, maybe with the lack of a running game when Cutter got elevated to head coach. I believe he got a little less hands-on, a little less.
He admitted it.
You think he was still hands-on, but I think it suffered a little bit.
Oh, he admitted that he wasn't as much hands-on.
And maybe that happened with Bowles at the Jets. And by the way, the Jets are dysfunctional. Well, you know that. They got those Johnsons at the helm. Those guys are clowns.
Well, Peter Schrager is apparently a consultant.
Yeah, I mean, that tells you all you need to know. You got one Johnson, now you got another Johnson. Johnson and Johnson. They're both terrible.
And that's the name of their company.
Yeah, that's right. And so I don't think Bowles had a fighting chance, Lee. He could be one of those guys that's a better assistant than a head coach. No shame in that.
No.
Cutter could be another guy. Wade Phillips,
one
of the great examples.
Mm-hmm.
Fabulous assistant. Who knows how Monty would have ever done if he ever got a head coach. Rod Marinelli went 0-16, drummed out of the league, never get another chance.
He still has a dominant defense.
Yeah. So, Lee, do you think Bowles going back, focusing on one side of the ball, will go a long way to restoring Bowles' reputation in this league as a defensive guy?
Well, I hope so. The last two guys that were defensive coordinators were once upon a time good defensive coordinators, then became head coaches.
And it didn't work for Mike Smith.
That's
it,
being polite. Not. And Lovie, when Lovie took over the defense, we all thought Lovie was bad, and he was. We didn't dream what was going to be, what was going to happen with Mike Smith. I mean, that was unfathomable. Holy cow. And so let's hope history doesn't repeat there. That's the last thing Bucks fans need. An over-the-hill defensive coordinator to, you know, go back to his roots and stub his toe, to be polite.
By the way, Lee, speaking of Buck defensive coaches, I got an email from...
Ra?
No, a friend of mine in Cincinnati. I believe he works for the Bengals website, Jeff Hobson. We call him Butch Hobson. And he's a good man, been around a long time. And he says, Mark Duffner says hello. So wow. I emailed him back because Duffner's with the Bengals. And I said, tell Duffner the Sage says hello. So I'm waiting to hear from
him. Duffner's a good guy.
He is a good guy.
Yeah. So, you know, let's...
There was no way he was going to stay, though, Lee. There was no way. With the regime change, it wasn't going to happen.
Yeah, he wanted his own people. I was a little surprised they didn't keep Buckner, only because Arians and Buckner have worked together before.
You know what? I agree with that. Yeah. And Buckner upgraded the Buck pass rush. Now, he had JPP, and yeah. I understand that.
Well,
But it did get better last year.
It did. And I think mainly because of JPP. But yeah, Buckner helped. Now, I will say that I like the current defensive line coach. He's been with Bowles and with Arians for a long time. Casey Rogers, who was brought into the league by none other than Bill Parcells himself.
Nice.
And you could be a defensive line coach for Bill Parcells. I dare say you know what you're doing. Because Parcells wouldn't tolerate
Parcells is an old linebacker coach.
Yeah. Parcells would not tolerate a defensive assistant that wasn't up to par. And when Parcells retired, Casey Rogers stayed with Dallas.
So, yeah, he had a great staff in New York, too, Parcells. He had a great staff.
Everywhere.
Of course, Belichick was on that staff.
Yeah. And Ray Hanley.
Yeah.
My favorite clip of Ray Hanley was his only year with the Giants, and he was terrible. That New York press was, like, encircled around him at a table. And, you know, he's doing one of his weekly press conferences. Somebody asked him a question that Hanley didn't like, and Hanley starts wagging his finger, and the guy says, "You ask me that one more time, this press conference is over." Sure enough, very next question, that was the same question, and he got up and left.
You know, speaking of Giant coaches, Lee, quick story. My first year covering pro football, 79, New York Giants, with UPI New York. Who did I replace on the Giants? Greg Aiello. Greg Aiello, who went to the Cowboys and then worked to the league office.
So I did not know he went for the Cowboys.
He did go to the Cowboys first.
Okay. Did he work for Notre Dame at one time? Or
he went
there?
To Notre Dame.
Okay.
He did. He went to Notre Dame. So here I am, you know, I'm 24 years old, and I'm doing the Giants. Rookie coach, Ray Perkins. Rookie quarterback, Bill Sims. Out of Moorhead State.
Yep.
Lee, Kentucky. Moorhead State. The Giants were a bad team. So in 81, they finally made the playoffs. I think they broke a 15-year drought. You think the Bucs are bad at 11? They had 15 years. Anyway, Perkins ended up leaving for Alabama. Parcells took over for him. By the way, they wanted to fire. Parcells went 3-12-1 his first year. They wanted to fire him.
Wow.
It was a real question about whether he'd come back. And a few years later, he won the Super Bowl.
Wow.
So now I get down here in 85. Lehman Bennett, thank you very much. 2-14 and 2-14. You're out of here, Lehman. And who comes in? Mr. Ray Perkins. And of course, Culverhouse is a big Alabama guy.
Yeah.
Loved Alabama. You know, and Perkins was a great player at Alabama. Great player. Caught passes from Namath.
Yeah.
And then ended up a wide receiver for the Colts, I think.
Colts, yeah.
Caught balls from Unitas.
Yeah.
So I'm sitting there in 1987, and Culverhouse announces Ray Perkins is the new head coach. And he walks in. This is an old one Buck place. We're in a trailer. You know, nothing like we got now. Taj Mahal over there. Perkins walks in the trailer, stops in his tracks, sees me. "What the hell are you doing here?" "Ray, I was just about to ask you the same question." And I got along with him.
Did he? For 3 years. Yeah, I know he was kind of prickly with a lot of reporters, but you got along with him.
One of the few coaches, I believe, without doing the research, Lee, you tell me. One of the few coaches that was ever fired with 3 games remaining in the season. After a win.
Really?
After a win, they fired him.
Wasn't somebody fired this year?
They beat the Falcons and they fired him.
Wow.
How do you like that?
Wow, yeah, that's rare. Now, were you and Parcells on first game basis?
We were, and you know, I told that story. It's
in
worth,
Miami,
it's
right?
worth repeating yeah. in Miami on that elevator. You lost a lot of weight. I said, you know, "Bill, you're looking slim. You're looking sharp." And he goes, "I've been doing a lot of running, Ira." I said, "Away from the media, from what I hear."
He laughed.
He laughed.
And there was a guy that was working for Dolphin, you know, website. And meanwhile, Parcells got off at the second floor. We stayed on to the third. The door opened. Parcells walked out. He turned around. He goes, "I miss you, Ira." And he kept walking. The guy from the Dolphin website said, "I can't believe you said that to Coach Parcells." I go, "He's just another guy. Yeah, just a jag. And you can't treat these guys like royalty, Lee.
I never have.
That's why I don't call them BA. Everybody's calling them BA. I'm not part of that group.
And neither are you, by
the way. I don't know the guy that well that I can call him BA. When you were up in New York covering the Giants, you rubbed elbows with some who's who of reporters, didn't you? Peter King was on the beat, was he not? New York Post?
He might have been in Cincinnati at that time. He started on the Cincinnati Inquirer. Gary Myers was around.
Gosselin?
Vinny Dottrani, who they call, I think they called him the Sage. He got in very tight with Parcells. And that's the great Parcells story, which you're going to tell this summer again with Don Banks. You know, the great. That's one of the great. That's one of the great sports writing stories. So I expect fans, you're in for a treat when DeKemper tells that story. Give him a couple of weeks. Well, I'll remind him. But there were some big timers on that beat. There's no question about it.
When I said Goose,
the problem was the Giants weren't any good. Mm. Lee, they weren't. They just weren't any good. And then all of a sudden, I can't remember if it was 80 or 81. Here comes Lawrence Taylor. Everything changed after that. Everything. Can you imagine hooking up a Parcells as a linebacker coach and he gets Lawrence Taylor?
Magic made
with the number two pick in the draft.
Magic made in heaven.
Who did the Saints pass up and take at number one instead of Lawrence Taylor?
What year was it, 81?
80 or 81. Who'd they take? The guy was a good player.
Chuck Muncy?
George Rogers.
Yeah.
The running back. He's good.
For a couple years, he was good, yeah.
But Lawrence Taylor, some people believe, I'm not willing to go this far. Some people think he's the best defensive player of all time. I don't know that I'm willing to say that. He did change the game.
He's right up there with Reggie White.
Reggie White and maybe Joe Green. And your boy Butkus is in the mix.
Butkus was...
Reggie White is strong.
Ronnie Lott's right up there, too.
Yeah. What I loved about Reggie White, he played end and tackle. That's
rare.
Yeah,
he did. And he dominated.
And he dominated.
That's a very good point.
Wasn't he the first great free agent signing, Lee?
Yeah, by the Packers. And the old story was Holmgren called him up, and obviously Reggie White was very, very religious. And Holmgren left a voicemail. "Reggie, this is God. You want to play for the Packers."
That's outstanding by Holmgren. Outstanding.
We talk about dominant. A player that was dominant. Obviously, Leroy Solomon was dominant. The Bucks have a player close to being dominant right now. Obviously, Reggie White and Leroy Solomon are the creme de la creme.
Well, you got Mike Evans on the other side of the ball, who's got 5 1,000-yard seasons.
You know, I thought of that a week or so ago. I'm glad you brought that up.
I think there's room for Evans to get even better, Lee, and I think you think so, too. Maybe yards after catch.
Yeah.
I mean, he's awfully good.
Yeah.
He's awfully
good. Have we seen a Hall of Fame wide receiver, maybe? Maybe. I know it's early. Maybe?
He could be one in the making.
Yeah,
he could. And you know what? He works on his craft, Lee.
Yeah, we're going to find out a lot of things this year. We're going to find out just how lousy the Bucs' defensive coaching was. Right now, I would suggest it's beyond lousy. I mean, if Al Davis of the Glazers, they would have got rid of Mike Smith for a cause.
I called this season a referendum on the 2018 Buck coaching staff.
Yeah, I can't complain about the offensive coaches because look what they did in the passing game. Now, I know to this day, the Bucs organization, they really regret Munkin leaving. They know why he left, because Arians wasn't his guy, and Arians wanted his guys. You know, same mentality as Arians.
I got a feeling he's going to do very well, Lee.
I would not be surprised if he's a head coach next year in the NFL. Would not surprise me whatsoever. Of course, right now, just so people don't know, Munkin was offensive coordinator and wide receivers coach.
They led the league in passing last year.
Yeah, and now he's the offensive coordinator with the Browns. He's working with Baker Mayfield. So we shall, and all those wide receivers they have. So we shall see. At any rate, you talk about the referendum on last year's coaches. Could we see the wide receivers group? I know Humphreys isn't around anymore. To me, Jackson leaving was addition by subtraction. Could we see a regression from the wide receivers because Munkin was such a good coach?
I think we could, and you might be downplaying Humphreys a little bit because...
He was very good.
He earned Winston's trust. Mm-hmm. Now, he wasn't going to bust a 40, turn an 8-yarder into a 40-yarder. But the guy was effective. He was effective. And you could tell by the contract he signed where is he, in Tennessee now? Yeah. And John Robinson knows the guy because he's best friends with Jason Light.
Well, Robinson was on Buck's staff when they got him.
That's right. That's right. That could hurt them a little bit, especially if this Perryman guy, who hasn't really done much as a pro, he's been an underachiever, and if they don't get the best out of him in terms of stretching the field. One thing about Jackson, he didn't catch a lot of balls, but at least you had to respect where he was. You had to.
The speed, yes.
The speed. Perryman doesn't command that kind of respect unless he starts catching football.
Now, you're respecting DeSean Jackson, which is an interesting choice of words I use there in the same sentence. But have you noticed that the Philly beat writers are singing the praises of DeSean Jackson, who's practicing returning punts? When he was here, he was lethal at it, but Cutter wouldn't play him there because Cutter always used, I don't know if it was a cop-out or what, Cutter always said, well, it's up to him. And at one time he did return a punt that I remember. It went for a touchdown, but oh boy, here's the flag. It was Monday night against Pittsburgh.
Not a good reflection on the Buck coaching staff, Lee. Not a good
reflection. He walked all over them.
He wasn't being very productive as a wide receiver, except when Ryan Fitzpatrick happened to be throwing him the pigskin. You got to try to maximize the guy as an impact player.
Yeah.
He might win you a game on special teams,
yes.
Lee. What are we afraid to ask him? And now he goes to Philly for the second time around, right in Philly? And he's volunteering, he's in the neighborhood, and he's doing this, and he's doing that. And it's just a bad look, Lee. It's a bad look for his years in Tampa.
Remember when he was first signed, Munkin criticized him? It's okay, you signed the contract, now earn it. You wonder if that started him off as kind of detached from the team.
And boy, did they target him that year in free agency. I think he signed the first day, and the deal was probably done weeks before that.
Yeah, probably at the combine.
And they paid him.
And in retrospect, how much of a mistake was it bringing those clowns in from Washington? I think I destroyed the locker room.
Oh, boy. You know, Jason, I hope you're listening to this, because you got to listen to your own words sometimes, and now he says the mistakes are made from the neck up. And remember that going forward. Just remember that. Bring in the right kind of guys. It helps. We got the right guys on this kind of podcast over here, Lee. And it helps.
Do you have any final words for our listening audience?
Final words? Well, we're going to be joined by the inimitable Mr. Isbitz.
Will we?
On next week's podcast.
Will we?
Next week's.
Will we?
We're giving him the week off. Who knows what he's doing, Lee? Nobody knows. Isbitz's wife doesn't know what he's doing. And I don't want to start any trouble over there. So, Mrs. Isbitz, if you're listening, your husband's working. He's making money. He's working. We came here the other night, Lee, and we had a couple envelopes waiting for us. We didn't have to worry about talcum powder or any kind of powder being in the envelopes. They were nice game checks. So, Isbitz, my hat's off to you wherever you are. Good night.
Good job, fellas. Good job. I will see you next week. Now, remember, Thursday night, June 20th, Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon. The all-new XT6 rollout, free food, drinks, hanging out with Ira 5 to 7. Just go to edmorescadillacbrandon.com to RSVP. And the following night, Friday, June 21st, Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa. Ira will be back there again, eating and dining with you 5 to 7 p.m. Check out the XT6. It's so beautiful. Go to edmorescadillactampa.com to RSVP, and we'll see you there.